Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
And just to begin with, what if I told you that I wrote a book that is entitled How Did I Become the Most Humble Man in Central Europe? And what all you need is just to read that book, you know. We don't have to talk about it anymore. And you are laughing, and of course I'm glad that you picked up it's a joke. It's very dangerous to make jokes in a second language, you know. Sometimes you say a joke and nobody laughs. Sometimes you talk seriously and everybody laughs. But the truth is that I can really be proud about my humility, about what I know about humility. So on the contrary to the joke, I feel inadequate to speak on this subject because I struggle. I struggle with pride. I struggle every day, frankly speaking. And I'm not able to share many examples of humility of my own life. I can only share some struggles with my pride, and I am going to, in a while, share some of them. But the reason that we are talking about this topic is that it is important. And humility is not, it's not surprising that it's hard to find humility in the world. We see our politicians, we see our stars, movie stars, sports, and there is not much humility there. But what is surprising, what is even shocking, is that it is equally hard to find humility among Christians, among the followers of Jesus Christ, who became a man, who humbled himself to become a man. And sadly, also, it's hard to find humility with those in the leadership positions. So let me talk first about pride and humility in general, and then we are going to move and think together about humility in Christian leadership. We will look at some examples of humility that we have in the Bible, of some Bible characters, Moses and Apostle Paul, and then a part of this will be a discussion, and so please save your questions and comments, and we will have enough time to talk about them. So, the need for humility. Let me first confess I need humility in my own life. When I was preparing for the forum, I had a quiet time, and I was, of course, reading Philippians chapter 2, the same passage that John Piper is doing such a wonderful exposition in the morning. And so I came across of those verses 3 and 4 in particular. Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself. Let each of you look not only to your own interest, but also to the interests of others. And immediately, I had to go into confession. Why are you going, Joseph, for the European Leadership Forum? You have your own interests there, right? Your ministry has many interests there. Is it really all that is in your heart? Have you considered the interests of others? And you go there, and I have to confess and change my attitude. Why do I often act like an orphan instead of being the son? Why is it so difficult for me to say I was wrong? Why am I misusing the law? Why do I struggle with my reputation issues? Why is it so difficult for me to do something right and not to tell anybody about it? The answer is obvious. I struggle with pride and I need humility that I lack. There is a need for humility in a mission work. I was shocked to learn the following statistics. Did you know what is the number one reason why missionaries are leaving prematurely their mission field and going back home? Mm-hmm. Conflict with other missionaries. In other words, pride, lack of humility. Churches and other Christian organizations. You know, what is the most common reason why churches have major inner divisions, split, why churches and ministries dissolve? There are inner conflicts and struggles that are mainly, not all the time, but most of the time, caused by lack of humility. I am on the track of leaders of Christian organizations here, and we had a discussion yesterday about the situations, like transitional situations in churches and ministries, and someone said there that the most new churches in his country are not being born naturally. They are being born by C-section. What did he mean by that was because of the splits. Because of quarrels, fights, they split and start a new church. Isn't it sad? In marriage and family, there is a great need. I am sad to say that Czech Republic is the number one country in the world as far as divorce rate is concerned. And the consequences of that are devastating. I'm not proud of it. And now, the statistics say that almost 90% of divorcing marriages say that the reason for the divorce is, I quote, differences in character, opinions and interests. 90% of reasons why marriage is divorced. In other words, lack of humility. The same is true about our other relationships. What is the reason for most of the damaged relationships, end of friendships, conflicts, disputes, unbearable work situation? Pride and lack of humility. And finally, the need of humility in evangelism and disciple making. Why is it that so few people in Western, Central Europe and Eastern might be following? Why so few people are coming to know the Lord Jesus? It is their pride. They don't want to do it their way. They are not wanting to admit that they need, that they have a need. And it's not only the pride of the non-believers, it's the pride of the Christians. That is the reason why there are not so many coming to know Him. Because people see the pride. And it is a great obstacle for them in coming to know Christ. If this is Christ's, if these are Christ's representatives, I don't want to do anything with Christianity because I see pride, I see hypocrisy. So please understand, I'm not trying to say that humility is the only reason for all of those things. I'm just trying to say that it might be one of the main contributing factors to those things. And actually, St. Augustine was much more radical. I'm quoting Augustine. "Should you ask me, what is the first thing in religion?" I should reply, "The first, second, and third thing therein is humility." And Andrew Murray, who was born in South Africa in 1828, he wrote the following: "When I look back upon my own Christian experience, or at the Church of Christ as a whole, I am amazed at how little humility is seen as the distinguishing feature of discipleship. In our preaching and living, in our daily interactions, in our families and in our social life, as well as fellowship with other Christians, how easy it is to see that humility is not esteemed the cardinal virtue, the root from which grace can grow, and the one indispensable condition of true fellowship with Jesus." Sorry for that extensive quote, but he's saying something significant. He's saying humility is not just one of the issues. He's saying it's a root from which grace can grow and all of the other things spring up from that. Was Mary right? Let's think about it a little more. What might be some definitions of humility and pride? I like the best the definition by Charles Spurgeon. And he said, "Humility is the proper estimate of oneself." Proper estimate of oneself. What it means is that humility is rooted in reality, in who God is and who I am. And based on that, my estimate about myself is real, is right. So, God is great, God is loving, He is all-powerful, He is the source of everything, and I have nothing to bring to Him. Because all I have, money, possessions, gifts and talents, abilities, even my own life doesn't belong to me. It is His. It was given to me. And there is no reason for me to boast with any of these things. So I come to Him as an empty vessel, knowing that I am totally dependent on Him and He is truly everything to me. And in myself, I am really nothing. And oftentimes, I must confess, I am an arrogant nothing. But on the other hand, however, I am His dear son. I've been bought by a great price with the death of His son, and I am the heir of the king, the ruler of the universe. So these are the realities that humility can be based on: who God is and who I am. And on the contrary, the pride, the loss of humility, is then the improper estimate of oneself. So a proud person is not acting according to reality, but he lives in some kind of distorted reality, false reality. And if humility is the root of every virtue, then pride is the root of every evil and sin. Another helpful definition that I found was that humility is the freedom of not having to think constantly about myself. Humility is the freedom of not having to think constantly about myself. And we'll talk about it a little more when we go to the Apostle Paul. But having to think about myself all the time is a tyranny. It's a slavery. And I get miserable when I do that all the time. C.S. Lewis, in his book Mere Christianity, he had a brilliant chapter on pride there. He has an observation about humility, and he says, I paraphrase, when you meet a humble person, and then later on you recall that meeting, you are not thinking of him as a humble person. What you will remember is that he was totally interested in you. He wasn't talking about the fact that he is nothing, but he was focused on you, your needs, your interests. And I can give many examples of meeting people who would leave that impression on me. Let me share one that is not my own. One of my colleagues came to the forum maybe 2 years ago to hear, and at the plenary session, you remember there are these prayer times in pairs. So he was sitting next to an older gentleman, and they got praying, and this gentleman asked him a lot of questions. How can I pray for you? What is happening in your life? And so they prayed for each other, and later on he found that this gentleman was Oz Guinness, one of the speakers there. He said, I couldn't believe it. He was just so interested in me, who I am, you know? But he took interest in me, and so that was a beautiful thing for that person, for my colleague. Very, very attractive. And that's true about humility. Humility is attractive. It attracts people. Now, let me share briefly about the origin of humility and pride. Obviously, humility comes from God, as every good thing comes from Him. Humility comes from God. Our God is a humble God. He created the first people in His own image. So they were satisfied, they were happy, they were without sin, and they were humble. They were completely dependent on Him, on their Creator. Another created being, Satan, who was for his pride, which meant the desire to be as God, he was cast out of heaven because for that, and he's also being called the old serpent. And as such, he injected his poison, the poison of his pride, because this is his main characteristic, pride. He injected it into the system of our first parents. And they lost their humility. They allowed him to do that, and they lost their blessed state and became sinful, became proud. And so the pride is of satanic origin. I didn't realize that before, but it's of satanic origin. It's of supernatural origin. And there is a supernatural power of darkness behind the pride. And we, as human beings, we are powerless against it on our own. And only another supernatural power, greater than the power of the darkness, God's power, can help us in this desperate situation. How? We all know that. That's the gospel. God sent His own Son, the Lamb of God, down to earth to bring the lost humility of heaven down to earth to us. And we can see it in many ways. That's the next point, the humility of the Son of God. We can see it in the way how God sent His Son to this earth. He didn't come into a royal family. He didn't come even into a middle class family. He came to a very poor family. He wasn't born in a normal setting. He was born at a place where animals live. And, you know, as we continue and read about our Lord, the summary of His incarnation and of course His work, His life here on earth, and His work on the cross, humility is the number one thing in that. And so that's why Thomas Aquinas says, if you are looking for an example of humility, look at the cross. So, in summary, Jesus, as the Son of God in heaven, humbled Himself and submitted Himself fully to the will of His Father. And Jesus, as the Son of Man on earth, humbled Himself and did nothing by Himself or out of Himself. He did only what He was told by His Father to do. In John's Gospel, we read many, many times, I do nothing on my own. I am not receiving the glory from man. I am doing only what my Father says I should be doing. I am not speaking my own words. I am not seeking my own glory. And He didn't stop there. Not only He humbled Himself before God, but He also humbled Himself before man and became our servant. He was acting to our benefit to the point of His own he lost His own life because of that. Now, occasionally we hear that when there is a terrorist attacks the bombing, the terrorists sometimes shout Allah Akbar. In Arabic, it's God is great. It is true, God is great. But the fact that God is great, it didn't have to be announced by any supernatural being to us. But the fact that God became small in order to save us It goes so against our natural understanding that he had to send his son, his own son. So he lost everything. He died for us. But on the other hand, what did he gain? He was exalted, as we read in Philippians 2, above everything. Every knee shall bow, every tongue confess, here and there and there, that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of the Father. Humility is always rewarded, not immediately, but eventually. Okay, let's move to the topic of Christian leadership and humility. How can we think about it, and what can we learn from some of the biblical characters? Let's talk about Moses, maybe, at first. In Numbers 12:3, we read that Moses, I read it, now the man Moses was very meek, more than all people who were on the face of the earth. When I read that somebody was above anybody else, I want to know why. Why was Moses the most humble man in his day on the face of the earth? And what was different about him? What was exceptional about him? I believe part of the answer, and I invite you to add to this, part of the answer is that we read in Numbers 12:8 that God spoke to him mouth to mouth, clearly, not in riddles and dreams. So I would say Moses came to know God quite a bit. And you know what? He wanted to know him more all the time. So for example, if we read in Exodus that he spent 40 days on the Mount of Horeb, where the Ten Commandments were given to him, he was with God. He was very close to him. And then after those 40 days, he says, "Show me your glory. Give me more. I want to see more. I want to know more about you." And so I think he was able to see reality, who God is, who he is, who Moses is. And I think that made him a humble person, that made him a humble leader. I think the humble person knows reality about God and knows reality about himself and acts according to that reality. And we can do the same. Can we come to know him? Of course we can. And we have a better access to God than Moses. We have his spirit indwelt in our hearts and lives. And we have an access, that direct access to God through Jesus Christ. We can come to know him. And we can become humble as a result of that. So that's one observation. Another one is that if you have your Bibles, and you can really open them and turn to Hebrews chapter 11, a very famous chapter on faith, Hebrews 11 and verses 24 to 27. We will not read of the, all of those verses, but just let's scan through the text and see. Verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. What do we see here? Of course, we see his trust, his faith there. He simply trusted his God, the God he knew. We usually trust the person that we know well. So he trusted him. And he refused temporal pleasures, status, wealth, reputation, because he was looking to the real, permanent reward. He was looking at the end of the game. So he got eternal perspective. He knew that this life is not everything. It's just a little piece. It's just the little part of the whole thing. So he saw it in the right proportion, in the perspective. And it helped him to endure the hardships and the challenges, the huge challenges that he was facing, opposition, and everywhere where he went and what he did, he stayed strong. And so he got eternal perspective that helped him to be humble, but on the other hand, it helped him also to be strong. Humility doesn't mean that we should be weak, or it is not a weakness of a leader, it is a strength of a leader. And a third little observation about Moses is that he was not overly concerned about himself and his own interests, but he was looking at the interest of others. And there are many, many incidents from his life that we can recall when we say that he put the interests of his people before his own interests. Let me give you a little personal illustration. Years ago, I met a person who was a leader of a huge, big mission organization. And I've been leading a small organization. So he was much more important person than me. But for some strange reason, he approached me and his attitude was, I want to come to know you. And I said, sure, why not? And so we became closer. We were sharing, we were praying together. And then he said, I want to serve you. And I was thinking, wow, what is his agenda? What kind of agenda does he have? And you know what I found? He had no agenda on his own, other than my interest, other than just helping me and the little ministry that I was part of. It didn't bring anything to him. Now, years later, he's still the same, but the situation changed, and I was able to encourage him in a big struggle that he had. You know, without his humility, there wouldn't be this friendship, this relationship. And it was something that we see at Moses, we see it with Apostle Paul, we sit with other leaders around us, and it's the beautiful thing to see. Okay, let's move to the Apostle Paul and what can we learn from him. I just mentioned two things or two concepts. The first one is in 2 Corinthians 12, 7 to 10. And you probably know by now what I'm going to share about him. It is the thorn in the flesh. It is the thorn in the flesh passage. But let's notice the context of it. The first verse of the 12th chapter says, "I must go on boasting." Actually, he says, "I must go on boasting," and he's not boasting at all in the rest of the chapter. But then he says, verse 7, "So to keep me from being too elated by the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being too elated." I gather it's too, I don't know that word, I must confess, in English, but it means proud. It means boastful. And then the Lord, and he asked him to leave it, take it from him. And the God said, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." Do we want to become more humble people, humble leaders? If so, maybe God will use a thorn in the flesh. Something difficult, something not easy, something I wouldn't have chosen. But His grace is enough. And even that difficult thing can help me to have a proper understanding of myself and a proper understanding of God and staying humble. And the second concept to me was very, very revealing. We can find it in 1 Corinthians 3, chapter 3, verses 21 to the 4th chapter, verse 7. And we are not going to read the whole passage. But the context of the passage is that in that church, in the Corinthian church, there were many problems, and one of the problems was the problem with boasting. People were boasting, and the reason for boasting, for pride, taking pride, was that some of them thought they are better because they were taught by Apostle Paul. Others thought that they are more important because they were discipled by Apollos. And still others were thinking, oh no, we should be the leaders because we have been mentored by Peter himself, the one that is the rock. And so they were having disputes like that among themselves. Now, when we look what kind of answer Paul gave them, he basically showed them his own example. He gave him the example of how is it for him in those kind of things, boasting, pride, humility. And some people, including Timothy Keller, call this gospel humility. Let's look more closely to verse 3 of chapter 4, 1 Corinthians. But with me, it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by any human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself. So in the first part of the verse, he says, I paraphrase, I do not care what you think about me, you Corinthians think about me. And other words, I do not care what kind of verdict do you pronounce about me. That is, by itself, it's amazing, because I don't know about you, but I am naturally a people pleaser. I want people like me. I want people think nice about me, well about me. Paul says, I don't care. Then, in the second part, he says even something more shocking, more radical. He says, I do not even care what I think about myself. That is really radical, because it goes directly against our culture today. If the culture says, okay, people can think something about you, but you just set your own standards and live up to these standards, and then you can think well about yourself. Paul says, that doesn't work. And I don't even care what I think about myself. He says that he doesn't put much value on the verdict others pronounced about him. He doesn't put any more value on the verdict he himself is pronouncing about himself. And he says, even though I think I am okay, that doesn't mean anything, because I can be wrong. Because, you know, my own heart is deceitful. I can be deceived by my own heart. I am not objective. There are many people who think they are okay, and they are not. But then he says something that is marvelous in verse 4. He says, I am not aware of anything against myself, but I am not thereby acquitted. It is the Lord who judges me. It is the Lord. His opinion is the only one that counts. I don't care what you think about me. I don't care what I think about myself. I care only about what God thinks about me. And he knows exactly what is God's verdict about him. Right? The verdict is the gospel. In the moment he and I and you believed, he said, his verdict was, you are forgiven. Not only that, you are my beloved son, in whom I am pleased. You are justified. There is now no condemnation for you, because you are in me. That's the message of the gospel. And Paul was aware of it. And he lived it. He lived it. And he acted it in his ministry and in his leadership. I think that we would all agree that Paul was one of the most influential men on the face of the earth ever in the human history. And he was also a humble person. He was gospel humble. That set him free not only to be strong in his leadership, but also not to be constantly thinking about himself. So let us learn from him. I do not have to connect everything with me all the time. For example, I don't have to be asking constantly, how do I look? What about my glasses? Are they maybe a little, you know, uneven? What about what I am saying? Do they understand me? Do I make even sense? You know, do I really want to be in this room? Or what about my English? You know, I know that I'm making many mistakes. What about my accent? So what do they think of me? No, I don't have to think about it all the time. I don't have to connect all of my conversation that I am having at the table with other people here about what about me? What about me? How do they perceive me? Do I make a good impression? Tim Keller calls this the freedom of self-forgetfulness. And it is a wonderful little book that I strongly recommend. And it's on my to-read list every year, this little book, The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness by Timothy Keller. And only gospel can do it for us. That if we are still hurting, our self is not healed by the gospel, we will not be able to do that. We will not be able to be forgetting about myself. One of the things he says in that book is that humility is not thinking less of myself. It is thinking of myself less. So it's according to reality. It's the accurate view of who I am, and then I can forget about myself. Let me finish my thoughts with the verse from James chapter 4. Very famous verse, again, verse 6. But he gives more grace. Therefore it says, God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. God opposes the proud, and he gives grace to the humble. So, no matter how gifted we are, how capable we are, how zealous or hardworking we are, if we are proud, God is going to oppose us. And I don't know, but I think that he's a little stronger than us. So you know, if I should be against God, then it's not like a 50-50 chance who's gonna win. And on the other hand, if we are humble, we have his grace. Humility is attracting him to us, and he's giving us his grace. He does that regardless of our problems and difficulties and things that he can do. So either we humble ourselves, or God is going to humble us. That is the choice that we have.